The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
James Corbett, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
Not too bad. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on. I thought it was very interesting. You know, I listen to your podcast frequently, and you and James Evan Pilato were talking about New World next year, you know, what was going to be the theme for 2025. And your prediction was that 2025 was going to be the year for AI. And within a week or two, Larry Ellison starts being promoted by the White House, and they're going to do all these awesome, fascinating things with AI and mRNA vaccines. You know, so I thought we could, you're pretty well versed on this AI topic. You have been covering it for a very long time. You've been warning people for a very long time of how problematic it is. So I thought that we could talk about this as far as how AI pertains to the medical industrial complex, and then also how AI pertains to the military industrial complex, and maybe how all these things tie together.
Yeah. Well, let me just start. I'll gently correct you. It wasn't my New World Next Year prediction. That is a completely different prediction that I actually am glad to see is not yet coming to pass. But I did write my first editorial of the year on 2025 predictions, and my sure bet, 100% guaranteed to come true prediction for this year was the year of AI. So, yes, unfortunately, that it took about, what, a week before that started to show that it was actually bang on accurate. And I wish it wasn't, because, as you say, I've been warning for years about the implications of what is coming under whatever name that you give it. And let's attempt to head off the wonderful stream of comments that we will get from the no doubt well-informed listeners of yours that there's no such thing as artificial intelligence. It's a false. Okay, whatever. Whatever you want to call the angels dancing on the head of the pin. The angels are dancing on the head of the pin. So let's get to the actual meat of the matter and what is happening, because something is happening out there, and I think it is important for us to keep our eye on. And having said that, I can't even keep up with the stream of news that has come out in the last few weeks on this topic alone. So I hope you will help fill me in on all of these dots. But I did, for example, note that as soon as the transition started and the Trump administration started to come together, wouldn't you know it, Anduril and Palantir were talking about how they were going to be teaming up on new AI weapon systems for the U.S. Department of Defense under the Trump regime. Yay! Exactly as predicted, because as I wrote about late last year, Peter Thiel, the Thielverse, is highly connected to MAGA. Thiel was all in on Trump in the first administration, in fact, was literally there in Trump Tower in the transition 16. And so Thiel has his fingerprints all over the DOD. Not that he went away when Biden was in power. Palantir and Anduril and all of these Thiel-associated companies were still populating the Pentagon at that time, but they're back in force now, baby. And Lockheed Martin, Boeing, all these, you know, traditional old-school contractors, eat your heart out. The new school is about to eat your lunch, and that is all of these AI-powered companies that are working on the next generation of autonomous weapons systems. And for people who want to get a handle on what that is and what that might look like, I wrote an editorial late last year on the drone wars, You Are Not Prepared. That just gives an example, just a sort of a taste of what might be coming in the warfare of the future, which will look nothing like warfare we have ever seen in the past. And just the concept of drone swarms, these mechanized robotic drone armies that can appear and swarm and do crazy pre-programmed things in ways that no human being could possibly do, should probably, well, populate your nightmares for years to come. Hopefully stay in your nightmares and not actually develop into reality. But that's what we're staring down the barrel of the gun. But you raise another incredibly important avenue of exploration, which is how this AI, or whatever you want to call it, will be implemented in the medical space. Because, of course, one of the things that we learned over the past few years is that the medical space is the new cutting edge for the next generation of technology, technological warfare on the human species, I would say, that is being launched upon us, that is really, if we look long term down the road, it is part of the transhuman agenda. We are in the process of being transformed into something that is not quite human, that is some way merging with technology. And the first step of that is to inject various things into our bloodstream that are foreign to our bodies that will start, say, for example, spontaneously creating proteins and other such things. And we have already seen what that starts to look like. We're now seeing the next iteration of that technology with the Replicon self-amplifying mRNA vaccines that have just been launched here in Japan just last October, and that are coming to a country near you, wherever you happen to be living, and other such things. But as you say, as has already been announced this year, the next thing they're going to be working on is the cancer vaccines, the AIDS vaccines, mRNA vaccines, of course, which aren't vaccines at all. So yeah, some crazy stuff is coming, and all under this category of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and as an American, what makes this conversation more important to me is this bizarre shift in the propaganda, for lack of a better term, where you have all this alt-right ink and, you know, the vaccine was bad and the military-industrial complex was bad. But now that the good guys are using evil tech, that makes all this evil tech great. And as long as we can, you know, as long as we can kill the bad guys, whoever that is, it's good. You know, and we're watching this in our own government now. Yeah. As, you know, all these constitutionalists, we're watching Trump sign executive orders by the hundreds per day, and he's completely breaking the law and being totalitarian, but it's for the good of the people, you know, so it's cool.
It's called the Gulf of America now, so, man, exactly. Mission accomplished. That was worth it all right there. No, I'm reminded of a story that I heard once regarding, I think it was when Bill Clinton was first put into office. And so I guess 92, 93. And maybe it was at his inauguration or some sort of inaugural type of event. And at some point, you know, there's like the U.S. Air Force flyover of the jets, you know, and someone in the entourage apparently, allegedly remarked in Hillary's earshot something about, oh, you know, the American Empire and all that kind of stuff. And she's like, no, those are our jets now. As in, like, It's good now that we're in power. That's exactly what we are witnessing now. MAGA is just the woke libs mirror image. They're the same thing. They're just wearing a different costume, but they're the same people at base. And all they want is to support their team, because it is a team sport and nothing else. To hell with the world. To hell with principles. Who cares about any of that? So the image of that for me, that jet flyover moment for me, is Elon Musk appearing at the World Government Summit to talk about how he's tech support for the White House now and how he's going to set everything right with Doge. And you got the MAGA cap wearing public, yay, finally, they're going to save us with these algorithms and they're going to install a technocracy just like we always wanted. Yay! It's just nonsense. But here we are. Welcome to 2025.
It's fascinating and wild. And to just, the problem is you can't have an honest discussion about it, because then you're a blue-haired libtard or whatever.
Right, yeah. Or a black pill. Oh, you're such a doomer, James. Just get with the program. It's all good now.
Yeah, and I mean, just like the Gulf of America or Greenland, you know, Palmer Luckey, he was just on Sean Ryan. And what's even more fascinating is the stuff now that the right is cool and everybody's on board, they say stuff out loud. Like one of the things Palmer said was, talking about all these smart missiles, and we're doing that in Russia right now. And I'm like, you just submitted to a proxy war in the Ukraine, which supposedly was bad and supposedly going to end, and we shouldn't fund it and all this stuff. But America is shooting smart missiles at Russian targets right now. And it's just so unreal. They just say everything. And most people are so distracted or tied up in their day-to-day or trying to pay their bills and pay their taxes that they don't even pay attention to what's being said. Guys like Ellison, guys like Lucky Palmer, who were part of the military-industrial complex under these other boogeyman regimes that were so bad, and they made billions off of it. Well, that's, you know, we were helping the good guys when the bad guys were running the show, and we just so happened to make billions. It's really fascinating to try to follow the timeline and the way that people are disconnected from reality, that they can't connect the dots.
I hope people will look into characters like Palmer Luckey and realize what they are, which is essentially usable, serviceable puppets of the deep state. And I say that advisedly for people who look into the story of Palmer Luckey. He was this teenage wunderkind kind, however you say that. I don't speak German, sorry. Who came up and he invented Oculus Rift and whatever. And got bought out, of course, with the help of Peter Thiel money, because Thiel, of course, very associated with Facebook/Meta, that got interested in the Oculus. And so Palmer Luckey became essentially a Thielverse minion and created Angeral, which is another Lord of the Rings reference, because, of course, everyone in the Thielverse has to do their Lord of the Rings hat tip so that they can tell you what team they're on. I don't know. Anyway, and yes, now Angeral is this major military contractor that's creating these smart missiles and other such things. And as you say, they're totally out in the open about it. Again, this isn't a left-right thing. They were doing it under Biden. They're going to do it under Trump. It's just, yeah, okay, so for under Biden, of course, they wanted missiles for Ukraine to launch into Russia. Well, now maybe they want missiles for Russia to launch into Ukraine. Who cares? Whatever. As long as right. The bills are being paid, who really cares which way you're directing the weapons?
Well, it's for China, you know.
Oh,
it's
right.
For China,
yeah.
Now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, what do you see as the most alarming dangers of AI moving forward?
I mean, there's a million things we could point to. Autonomous weapons seems like it should be up there. The breaching of our literal bodily barriers into creating some sort of cyborgian transhumanist nightmare future might be another important step along that path, the brain chips that our Lord and Savior Elon Musk is working on and other such things. But it'll be the cool brain chip, guys. Mega. But something that I have warned about before that I think is maybe even, at least in the short term, a more realistic scenario and something that we should be thinking about is truly how we're already, to a large extent, being programmed by the algorithms into becoming what the algorithms want us to be. And I've explored that from a couple of different perspectives. For example, I had an episode up several years ago called Pricking the Filter Bubble, where I made the point that I am, to a large extent, who I am. The fact that I am James Corbett of the Corbett Report, sitting here doing my Corbett Report thing here in Japan, is to some extent because of the algorithms that YouTube was running back in the day, or maybe lack of algorithm might be better. Better way of putting it, because back in the day, YouTube and Google Video and all those other ancient platforms had trending and top 10 video type of lists that weren't gamed, that were actually authentic, and that day after day after day after day, back in that 2005, 2006, 2007 era, it was all 9/11 truth documentaries and other such things was day after day after day dominating those lists. And to some extent, it was partly that got me clicking out of curiosity and eventually falling down the rabbit hole. So to some extent, I am who I am because I've been shaped by this algorithm. But now there's a generation that's growing up that's being shaped by the current iteration of these algorithms, which, for example, again, I can speak from my own personal experience. I know that a decade ago, for example, 2015, if you had typed Federal Reserve into the YouTube search engine, the very first top search result would have been my Century of Enslavement documentary about the history of the Federal Reserve. But of course, once that was pointed out in a tweet by Chris Hayes, I always forget the guy's name, and I don't care. MSNBC vile creature, who made some panicked tweet about, oh, your children might see this if they're trying to research the Federal Reserve. Literally the very next day, suddenly, you couldn't find my documentary if you tried, even in quotation marks, Century of Enslavement. It just wouldn't show up. That's just one example of how the algorithms are now directing people in different directions and steering people away from certain information, etc., as, again, I'm sure anyone with their head screwed on straight has seen in recent years. But there's a bigger, deeper societal question about how platforms like this and the algorithms that they use and Twitter and TikTok and everything else. I don't know, whatever the kids are doing these days. I'm an old man. I don't care about that stuff. But the kids do, and they're spending hours and hours and hours and hours a day scrolling through content that is being algorithmically suggested to them and interacting with comments that may or may not be from actual human beings or maybe from bots. The dead internet theory is probably true and getting truer every day, where probably most of the stuff you interact with online these days is not human. It is probably bot-generated. And unfortunately, that really does start to program us as humans, because we are social animals that adapt to our social situations. And, well, since time immemorial, humans have been shaped by whatever interactions they have with the people around them. But now, more and more, people are being shaped by the interactions they're having online. And it's something that I've observed before. In the research that I do, sometimes I have to go, you know, into some obscure forum that existed 22 years ago that's been preserved online. And you can see the types of conversations that people would have online back in the day that almost resemble like actual human conversations, where people make points and they respond to those points and they give and take a little bit. And there's just sort of an overall level of humanity between people. Contrast that to 2025, it's instant flame war, and whoever says the most, you know, divisive, horrible thing tends to win. And I think, honestly, I think that internet communication is now leaking back into the real world as a generation of children is growing up who have been socialized on that to think that that is real human interaction. No, that's not how humans really interact. That's how people interact online. Oh, well, now it's how people are starting to interact in the real world, and we're starting to see that. As we see, the breakdown of civilization on many different levels, I think, honestly, is partly due to that leak of the internet online speak into the real world. So,
especially when we lock everybody into their home, right? And force them so that their only way to communicate
again, it was always an important part of what happened in the past few years. The hyper acceleration of the shift into the online everything world, the cyber world, was definitely given a huge shot in the arm by the scamdemic. So yes, that's an incredibly important part of this. But if we bring this back to the AI question, or the large language models or chatbots or whatever you want to call them, this was something I wrote about a year or two ago on the real dangers of the chatbot takeover, where I put it in the context of a movie I saw a couple of years ago that I'm glad I saw it when I did. I didn't see it when it came out. I think it came out in 2013 or something, but I saw it in 2020. It probably has more relevance. It's called Her. Yes, I think it's called Her. Starring Joaquin Phoenix and the voice of Scarlett Johansson. It's about a guy who falls in love with his operating system, and which sounds weird, but it's because in the near future, the OS is essentially like a chatbot, an AI chatbot kind of thing. But it knows you, and it knows what you like, and what it becomes the thing you want it to be. So he's having this relationship with this chatbot, essentially. It's not unusual, because in the near future, everyone dates their chatbot. It's just a regular thing. And when I saw that on the screen, and again, back in 2013 or whenever that came out, it probably sounded a bit silly, but 2025, I'm sure some versions of this already exist, and we can all imagine how it's going to happen more in the future. And that, to me, is probably a neglect. I mean, the autonomous weapons and the transhuman tinkering with our genome and all that is nightmare fuel. The less visible dangers, I think, are the ways that it's going to manipulate us in terms of our human relationships and the breakdown of human relationships, which has always, I think, been a goal of the tyrants and the rulers. They want you to be divided and conquered. The best way to do that is to divide everyone right down to the individual, so that your strongest relationships are really literally with your electronic devices that are being manipulated, engineered, controlled, programmed, and created by deep state forces.
Yeah, and to all what you were speaking about as far as the creation of social media, like all you need to do is go on Twitter right now and you can doom scroll down your thread and there'll be all this violence. And I'm like, what in the world? Why is there all these people beating each other up? Like, why does this exist? But two, why is it like predominantly in my thread? And then the other thing you'll see is all of these elucidatory declarative statements that are referring to something else, but zero context is given. You know, it'll be like whatever the thing is today, and somebody will make some blanket like 15 word statement, and you're like, what is he even talking about? And I guess if you're smart, you know what he's alluding to, and if you're plugged in and in the know. But for me, I'm like, this is so frustrating and dumb. Like, nobody talks like this. Like, nobody makes this declarative statement to literally billions of people, and there's only going to be a handful of people that even know what it's referencing. And then you're supposed to have a dialogue about it. You're supposed to talk about it. I mean, what is the point of this? You know, it's unbelievable.
I couldn't agree more with you. This is why I'm not on Twitter, never been on Facebook, not on Snapchat, Insta, TikTok, any of this stuff. Have absolutely no interest in doing so. Having said that, I might perform the performative contradiction by starting literally every channel that I possibly can on every platform this year, simply to auto-populate it with my posts, because that's the way you reach people. But I'm definitely not going to get in there and start flame-warring people back and forth in social media. I have negative interest in that. I would pay to not be on Twitter at this point.
Yeah, well, and that's the other amazing thing about Twitter. Like, in your feed, every other post will literally be Elon Musk. And you're just like, wow, this is so not natural. Like, there's no type of natural algorithm to this. There's nothing organic about this. This is completely created. It's hard to believe. It's hard to imagine, really, to be honest with you.
You know, to be fair, if I was a multi-billionaire, maybe I'd buy Twitter and just populate it with all my content. But I wouldn't expect anyone to like that platform. But maybe if I'm some sort of multi-billionaire, people will look up to me and cheer me as I appear at the World Government Summit. He's a good guy. You don't understand.
Did you hear the recent tweet by Elon Musk's new, she's a Rite Inc. Prostitute-looking girl, Ashley St. Clair? They just had a love child through IVF, and he performed like CRISPR, Cas9, and all these great things so that the genes will be perfect and wonderful, and he'll be like superhuman and crazy smart.
I didn't hear any of that.
I could go wrong.
I heard about the child. I didn't hear about any of the CRISPR, Cas9 stuff. That is very on brand. And yes, how are you going to sell all this stuff to the right wingers? How are you going to get them on board with this agenda? This is exactly how it is done. Like, I couldn't write it any more perfectly if I was writing a movie populated by characters. If I did that, people wouldn't believe it. Now we wouldn't fall for that. Meanwhile, in reality, yay, MAGA is now all on board with gene-edited babies. Yay!
Well, that was the funny and the irony thing, because I was like, I would have, like, researched this and fact-check it, because it sounds too fabricated. It sounds too perfect. But at the same exact time, you know, Rite Inc. and all the MAGA people are like, yay. It's like, wow. Like, they will swallow anything and not use any kind of logic, ration, or reason to say, wait a minute, let me think about this. Like, why is this a good thing? And it's so, and then there's so many voices being pushed to the front of the line that are genuine people and they're likable personalities. You know, I think of like somebody like a Tucker Carlson, but they toe the line. They are clearly not objective. And I think that's the strangest part, is like nobody on the right is objective at all. You know, it's all, oh, you have Trump derangement syndrome, or yeah, you're black-pilled. Yeah, nothing works. The sky's always falling. And, you know, that's why we talk about a lot on our channel, solutions and autonomy and what you can personally do to solve these problems in your life and in your family and in your community, because waiting for the government has yet to solve a problem that I'm aware of. And there's, even though now we continue to have new departments of government, even though supposedly the government is shrinking, you know, now we have DOGE, now we have some faith wing of, and then there's I continue to see government grow, but I haven't seen government shrink yet, so I'm still waiting.
All right, okay, you make an important point there, so let's let's examine this, because of course the argument is going to be, yeah, of course the Department of Government Efficiency exists now, but look at how many jobs they're cutting, etc. And I, you know what, I'm sure that there will be a significant reduction in, say, the workforce of the federal government over the coming years, and that will be touted as, see guys, they did it, they shrunk the government. But the deeper thing that is happening here is the installation of technocracy at the root of government. And again, how do you get the people who would presumably be the most against this, how do you get them on board with it? Obviously not under a Harris administration, obviously under a Trump administration, because then anything that happens is good. And so if we see the installation, the replacement of all of these humans, all these stupid blue-haired, woke, libtard humans, with algorithms that are programmed by Musk. Mm. All right, cool. That is the direction that this is going. Even to whatever extent all of that is pie-in-the-sky fantasy nonsense at this point, just the concept, just the idea of that is what we are being sold on right now. Absolutely. Again, you couldn't write a movie like this. Elon Musk's grandfather, Joshua Haldeman, literally card-carrying, not just a member, a leader of the Technocratic Party in Saskatchewan, who flees to South Africa because the Canadians were getting a bit nervous about this technocracy movement. He flees to South Africa. A couple generations later, Elon Musk comes back to Canada and then to America and starts to literally install technocracy in the heart of government and openly talks about it and brags about it, preparing for the Martian technocracy. It was one of his tweets from a few years ago. And now he's doing it in Washington first, and I'm tech support for the U.S. government. And again, like, you could not tie the historical threads together any more clearly. No, this is literally everything I have been warning about for decades now. But the people who were listening to me back when I, you know, oh, he was against Biden, that was good. But now he's against Musk. No, no, it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and that's where I think AI is much more critical, because AI is needed to implement the technocracy. And same thing with, you know, now we're going to make America great again. We're going to bring production back. Well, yeah, how can we do that? Well, because of Automation Nation, because of robotics, you know, we don't need China anymore. We don't need tragedy and hope. We don't need the Belt and Road Initiative because we can bring all of this back. Now, we're not going to create any jobs, so we're probably going to have to.
Yes, this is the part of the narrative we need to stress, because we know what is happening here, but people haven't caught on to it yet. Yeah, you know, they're getting rid of China. They're taking on, you know, they're stop the flow of jobs out of this country, bring manufacturing back home, all of this stuff. And they're going to follow through on this in some ways. It's just the ways that they do so are not going to be beneficial to you. It's just you're going to be the last to figure that out if you're following along with this agenda and rah-rah-rahing it. No, no, no. This is about replacing humans. That's what this is about. And it's all a cover of, don't worry, we're getting the Chi-Coms, guys. Yay. Stick it to them. Or, we're getting the federal government. Yeah, you know, reduce that government. But no, it's about replacing human beings. And what does Musk have to say about this? Oh, right. The exact same thing that all of the deep state puppets have said about it. Universal basic income is going. We're going to have to do that in some form. And I just wonder if the UBI will be tied to your whatever loyalty to the Trump administration, or your are you updated with your 18th cancer mRNA vaccine booster, or whatever they decide to implement in the future will be tied to your UBI, which will be essentially how you live on this planet, because they're getting rid of the humans from the labor force at this point.
Yeah, and they'll conveniently pay your UBI in some central bank digital currency, obviously. I mean, this is...
No.
It's all hand in
glove. Don't worry, guys. No, MAGA is outlawing all that. There will be no CBDC. There will be a PBDC, but private bank digital currency is a totally different thing, guys. Don't worry about that. It's not CBDC.
Yeah, I just listened to your interview. I want to try to get John Titus on about the war on bankocracy, because he's been ahead of that curve. Yeah, that's a great point, is like, oh, no, it's going to be this US.gov stablecoin or whatever, you know, or maybe it'll be the Trump meme coin. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
sure.
You know,
why not? Yeah, I could see that. Well, let's make the reserve currency of the planet Earth Trump coin. Yeah.
So as AI continues to expand, it's into the health sector and the health industrial complex. It's into the military industrial complex, and it's creating a panopticon online of technocracy to track us and trace us and flag us and help us monitor our carbon score and our social credit score. And, you know, as long as we, you know, as long as we agree with the current administration, you know, it's so fascinating. What do you see as some solutions or recommendations to sidestep a lot of this and to avoid it as the best we can?
Yes. And that's an important point, and I'm glad you make it. And I'm glad that that's what you talk about, because honestly, this is the only thing that matters. And it's really funny in a way that people who bring out these self-evident realities about the craziness of what's happening are called black pillars. Oh, you don't believe, you're just doomsayers. You don't believe in anything. You don't offer. No. Quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. People who just trust the plan and vote harder next time. No, you're the black pill. You're the ones who think that the only savior is going to come from the political heavens. And, well, I don't believe that. Let's put it that way. So people who want my exploration of that can go to corporatereport.com/hopium, where I've laid this out in a lot of detail. And people who will see that. And people who are not prepared to see that will not see that yet, but they will get it eventually. For the rest of us, what do we do about this? What are the actual things we can be doing? And I would say that anything and everything that doesn't have to do with the political stage play taking place around us is what we should be concentrating on. That is to say, our real lives, with our real connections, with our real human friends and acquaintances and neighbors, etc., is going to be the bedrock of whatever happens in the crazy world of political theater. The actual bedrock is the community that you have around you. And yes, these days that could be partly virtual, sure. We all know people. I'm talking to you. I've never met you in real life. I may never meet you in real life, but now we have a connection. Great. Okay, so you're part of a community and network that I have online. But it is also, I hope I don't have to stress, incredibly important to have an in real life, real world, physical community of people that you know and trust as well. And that is the basis of any possible solution to any of these problems that are being presented. For example, the problem of we're being automated out of existence and we're going to be rendered useless and meaningless, and the only thing we'll ever have to look forward to is our stipend UBI coming from the federal government, showing that we've been good boys and girls. How could we possibly combat that agenda? Well, certainly, I know that we can't combat that agenda if our only solution is to vote harder for the next politician to come and save us from that, because they all want that. So no, it's going to have to rely on us creating communities of people around us who are interested in real-life human connection and economy. And that's going to mean you have to know the mom-and-pop store down in, you know, who does this or that thing, that you don't have to go to a Walmart to use your UBI to pay for whatever you need. You know the person who does this in your own community, and you can foster that. And to the extent that we are losing that, and we are losing that, of course, to the extent that we're losing that, that is the ultimate long-term fail. That is how we fail as a species, is the more and more we offload this into faceless corporations to do everything for us, and the government will take care of the rest. We have essentially offloaded our sovereignty, our individuality, our humanity into someone else's. It's like it's in the cloud. You just, I don't know, whatever. It's in the cloud. All that means is that your data is on someone else's computer. Well, if you take your sovereignty and put it in the cloud, oh, it's the government. Oh, no, it's these corporations. I don't know how else to buy food. What else can I possibly do other than go to the grocery store? Well, if you don't know, then you've lost. So to the extent that we can form communities of interest of people who are willing to support each other, that's to the good. So I'm all for all of the ideas for ways people can start to come together. And it doesn't have to be, as I always like to stress, this all total eclipsing 100% all packaged in a bow solution all overnight. Of course not. It starts small and it builds from there as you start to expand your community. And that's why I like ideas like the freedom cells, which are predicated on the idea you create a cell of maybe 8 people, something like that, people that you know and that you can meet with on a regular basis, and you can start to help each other with projects. You can teach each other certain skills. You can talk and educate each other about what's going on. You can have that core of a community, and then your cell can connect to other cells, and then you can have a network of cells. I think that's truly the blueprint for real revolution, not the phony political kind that's dangled out in front of us as some hopium for the future. No, the real hope comes from us constructing those types of community networks.
And when you say something like that, oh, you just need to develop community, well, you're going to resolve multiple issues, but one, that is literally the core foundation of society is community, right? And from a Christian perspective, loving your neighbor is, well, you need to know who your neighbor is to love them. And then you need to, when you love them, you are creating that community. You're creating a sense of you care about each other. You want to know about each other's whereabouts and health and how are you doing? Do you need any help? And it sounds so almost passe now to say, you know, you start with your community, but we literally wouldn't exist as a society if we didn't work together as a community. So always, from my experience, the solutions are incredibly obvious, ancient, right? And it will completely resolve all of this social media fracturing and this hyperbole and this like broken non-contextual talk, right? If we're interacting in real time with local people. And a perfect example right now is due to this new bird flu, eggs are almost non-existent, right? When you go to the store, when you go to Walmart or the local grocery store, eggs are almost non-existent. And if you've been thinking about this for a while or planning for this for a while, we have a very large flock in our backyard, yep. Right? And so now people have been saying, hey, you know, I can't get eggs. I'm like, oh, well, I can sell you some eggs. You know, unfortunately, it's like $6 or $7 a dozen right now, but that's the going rate. And that's the other fascinating thing with all of this, like we're going to cut spending and we're going to reduce the deficit. And they refuse to talk about the monetary policy that's creating the hyperinflation, all the quantitative easing and all this stuff. And if they're not willing to suck any of that juice out of the orange, I mean, you can cut the budget all you want and you're not going to do anything with the hyperinflation.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, give me the power to issue a nation's currency and I care not who writes its laws. Attributed to Amschel Mayer Rothschild, it's probably a spurious quotation, but it's true. Whoever said it, whoever came up with that, it is true. Yeah, exactly right. The monetary power is the ultimate power, which is precisely why it is the power that will never, ever, ever be willingly relinquished by the good guys in government. They just care about you. They love you. Tell you what, guys, Federal Reserve, let's abolish it. I'm holding my breath waiting for that. And then it will, if they did, it would immediately be replaced by Trump coin. So anyway.
Right.
But yeah, you raise an incredibly important point. See, for me, the lesson of the scamdemic era was so blatantly obvious. It was an incredible wake-up call for people to realize how much they are dependent on these structures of control around them. To what extent were you able to stand up and say, nope, I'm not wearing the mask, or I'm not taking the vaccine, or whatever it is? To what extent were you able to do that? And if you were one of the people who I had to for my job, or there was nothing I could do about it, or I had to go into that store, I had to show them proof of my vaccination or wearing a mask or whatever. If that was you, that was your wake-up call to say, so how can I avoid this in the future? How about, that store over there is open and they're happy, you know, regardless of my status of being updated with my boosters or whatever, that store won't let me in. So what should I do here? How about I support that store? Or this store accepts cash, but this store wants me to pay with some electronic payment. Which store should I support? How can I form more contact and get to know these people and maybe start groups of like-minded people and start raising awareness and start directing energy and attention that way? That was the great wake-up call that we've had in the past few years. And it's remarkable to me to see how few people have taken that message to heart, have kind of forgotten or pushed aside everything that they supposedly should have learned over the past few years and decided that the answer is to vote harder and get someone into office who's going to do what they think they think, who will do what they think will do what they think they want to do. You know what I mean? Anyway, the real lesson is what we take out of it and what we do. And on that very note, I didn't even think about this, but back in April of 2021, I had an edition of my Solutions Watch series because, oh, by the way, I have a literally regular weekly podcast dedicated to solutions, which I don't see a lot of people in the independent media doing, but I'm the black pill doomsayer, right? I had an edition in April 2021 on choosing chickens, where I talked to Jack Spirko of the Survival Podcast specifically about what breed of chicken should you choose for your backyard coop in case you wanted to start raising your own flock. And I would love to hear if there was anyone, literally anyone in my audience who was inspired by that podcast who is now in a position where they have their own eggs and they don't care how many dollars a dozen it costs at the supermarket.
Yeah, one of the things that we did is we had a small cow herd and we started having enough for us. And then as we had a little bit extra, we started putting it out there for local pickup. Food, if you want to build community, start providing people their food. I mean, this is why there's been this global attack on farmers, because existentially, like, everyone needs to eat. And if you control the food, you control the people. But that's why there's been this global attack on farmers, because there is such a huge connection. And then there's an even greater connection when you're mindful of how you're raising your food and people that want, like, regenerative type agricultural food, whether it's beef or eggs or whatever, then you already have another common thread. The one common thread is we need to eat to live. And then if you're mindful of that food, you're just creating greater connections. And there's nothing more satisfying than putting in all this hard work and dealing with the real life frustrations of it's not farmland on Facebook, right? Like, cows get out, they break the fence, they break the barbed wire. They do it when it's raining sideways and the weather's terrible. So you fight through all that. And then when you give that person that product, you create such awesome relationships and people appreciate that. And not only do they appreciate it, they come back.
Exactly right. Wow. Sounds like community. Wow.
Yeah,
is that exactly how that works? Yeah. And the funny thing that I've noticed is that people have been psyoped into thinking that all of that is bad. It's funny how even in my own audience, there are so many people who just hate the idea of market and people like selling things to each other and not realizing that that is the basis of human cooperation as it has developed and over thousands of years. They don't understand, for example, I am a proponent of agorism, which comes from the Greek word agora, which is the marketplace, right? But we have this horrible association, oh, it's just evil capitalist cigar-smoking billionaires who are trying to stick it to the man, the average working man or something, instead of understanding, no, the marketplace meant the place where everybody came together to offer what they had, to get things from other people, and to form human connection. There was, I mean, you'd have the guy standing on the soapbox ranting about whatever, you'd have people talking and chatting and exchanging ideas as well as exchanging goods. That's the marketplace that we need. That's the public square that we need. Isn't it funny that now the argument is, no, the public square these days is Twitter.
Right.
Twitter
exactly.
Is no replacement for the actual real life physical marketplace. And if you don't see that, you're gone. You're lost. You're not human anymore.
And once again, right? So if you go to the physical marketplace, you're outside. You're getting sunlight and sun rays. So now you're getting vitamin D. So now you're healthier. You're looking people in the eyeballs. You're having real conversations. You get the context of what they're saying. You can read their body language. You can understand 1,000 times more what they're saying, who they are, what commonalities you have. You're creating real relationships and then you're bringing value. And for anybody that wants to be all like, you know, hate on money or whatever, you know, don't trade in fiat currency.
Yes,
barter.
Exactly right.
Your value.
Sure. Barter, whatever. Absolutely. And those things are possible when you're in that real life situation. They're not possible when you're in some online sterile environment where you're dealing with some sales bot. No, exactly right. So important. And, you know, I don't know how convincing or persuasive this will be to anyone, but it just seems to me that the Elon Musks of the world would be super happy if they could convert essentially entire generations of people, raise up children who will be like them, which is to say socially awkward, inept weirdos who cannot function in normal human environments. Again, take this for what it's worth, but that weird press conference where Elon Musk was in the Oval Office giving a press conference next to Trump with his child there and all that craziness.
Kid picking his nose.
President, you should shut your mouth. And all that, just wild, crazy nonsense. But the thing that it's funny because I tried watching that and I literally couldn't watch it because of how awkward and just weird and icky vibes are coming off of Elon Musk. He's just not a human being. But that is the image of someone who spends all of their day on Twitter. That is what you turn into because you forget how to interact with human beings in the real world. It's just so obvious to me, and I don't know why other people don't understand this.
Yeah, that is so true. A solution is creating community. You know, we use technology and social media to get our message out and to communicate in the broader sense. But as we create these local communities, and which will bring, you know, that's the other thing about creating local community, is if you create a large enough local community, it will affect your state on the local level, because I think we can still influence our states on the local level. There's a huge water issue in our area that we were able to shed some light on, and there was an amazing local response. And now there is an inordinate amount of political support that is standing against this new reservoir that's trying to abscond like 200,000 acres of predominantly ranch land, where ranchers are growing cows for people to eat. You know, and there's so much overlap on all of these subjects and topics, and at the crux, and this is my point, at the crux of these, it's always bureaucracy, which is now technocracy, and it's always government. Yep. Like there's no way that this Marvin Nichols reservoir could even begin to happen if it wasn't for government, and if it wasn't for like a good old boys network. And all of these bureaucratic laws, and you know, you need, well, if you're going to buy this 2,000 acres, then you need to steal another 198,000 acres so that you can reclaim it and make it like good woodlands, which you just took all that and destroyed it.
Yep. No, exactly right. You know, this is a principle that people need to learn about, the principle of subsidiarity, which is the idea that decisions should be made at the most local level possible for those decisions to be made. And as someone who is all about decentralization of power, I think that is the way we should be thinking about and approaching things. I would be ecstatic if people took, I don't know, 1/10 of the amount of time, energy, and attention that they give to the federal, national political puppet show circus nonsense that they have zero say over. You have no input to what's going on in Washington and whatever craziness is happening there. You have actual input into what is happening in your local area. You have a lot more say over that than you do over things that are happening thousands of miles away. But people aren't attracting. That's not a cool, amazing carnival stage show. That's not that WWE wrestling match that entertains us on the goggle box every night. That's not what I'm seeing on my Twitter feed. So why would I care about some local state project, something, whatever? Who cares? I just, you know, I hope people will, again, keep in mind that what is happening in your real area is more important than what is happening on the screens that you're seeing, that are representations of things that may or may not be happening thousands of miles away. But given how good AI-generated video fakes and photo fakes and other things are these days, who even knows anymore? Welcome to the mediated world of 2025.
Yeah, that is so true. This has been such a great conversation. I appreciate your time, James. As we wrap up, maybe do you have any closing thoughts on this whole AI topic? And then let everybody know, you know, where they can find all your information.
Well, I guess if we're going to put it in that context of solutions and what people can do about it, I would say that the AI topic does not admit of many solutions other than rejection. And that rejection has to take the form of a boycott, essentially. It doesn't mean that I don't think anyone should ever use ChatGPT or whatever. Whatever. You do what you're going to do. But I think the real win for humanity is if, as I've noted before, the amount of hours of screen time that people have every day has been reaching ridiculous levels. And I read a study, I don't know, several years ago at this point, that it was something like people in the United States spend something like 16 hours per day in mediated reality of some sort, looking at screens, reading books. Do people do that anymore? Whatever. Media, having earphones in, whatever. That, to me, is a loss for humanity. So if we could reverse that direction, I would say that's the win. And the more that we disengage from the screen time and engage in the real world, the less the AI threat has its power over us. Because its real power, as I say, is the way that it manipulates our thoughts, our actions, how we think about the world, how we see the world, what we see in the world, is now more and more being determined algorithmically. The easiest way to defeat all of that multi-trillion dollar industrial complex thing that has been foisted upon us is to just walk outside, talk to your neighbor in real life. Suddenly, none of this has any sway over you if you spend more time talking to people. So I think that might be one way to put a cap on this. The other way is to say, if people are interested in this, as I say, I do a weekly show on solutions, on things that people can be doing in their lives. Sometimes the big, heady, theoretical ideas, sometimes very specific, very simple ideas, and hopefully a lot of both and other things in the middle. So that's at CorbettReport.com along with all my other work. And I hope people will, at the very least, start thinking about what we've talked about today and see how they can implement some of these ideas in their own life.
Yeah, and I want to pitch, you know, we're a homeschool family, so we've kept all our kids out of government school. And I greatly appreciate your documentaries for their historical value and reference. And so we've used your documentaries to supplement history. I think you did, Arab Enslavement, you did a World War One and a World War Two documentary, correct?
I've done World War One. World War II is
World
the
War
dot,
One.
Dot, dot at the end
You're
of World
working
War
on it.
One. It will, anyway, I won't promise anything before it happens, but I will say, I will plug opensourceeducation.online, which is essentially some of my important documentaries, but it has been broken down into potentially home study type subjects, history, economics, politics, literature. It's broken down into different subject matter. So if you're interested in a certain subject, you can drill down on it, given some of the work that I've done over the years. Opensourceeducation.online. I hope people will use it as a homeschooling type resource.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll link James's website down below. I'll also include that link down below. James, thank you so much for your time, and thank you all for watching. We'll catch you on the next show.
Thank you.